Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Ultra-conservative investments make money 100% of the time and never lose. At the other extreme, some Far East funds lose as much as 60% and make money maybe 40% of the time. So what level of risk are you up for? Try our award-winning risk analysis tool and discover. It puts a number to your risk tolerance. Then, if you want, the professionals at KPP Financial can tell you if your current retirement plan is a good match. You can take the quiz. A free risk analysis is there for you on investtalk.com. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is September 6, 2016. Of course, I want your money questions. That's what we're all about. As always, I welcome any comments or any stories, as long as it's financial, and you can share anything you want, any of your experiences, if you just want to talk about it. That's okay, too. You know, it's a financial show. It's not about just answering questions about stocks, even though that's a lot of times we do. It's about financial issues. Now, as I've talked about the Federal Reserve, I've told you, it's way behind in its promises to raise interest rates this year. They haven't done it yet. Here it is, September. And they hinted that they were going to do about four times this year. And we haven't seen one. They're going to meet in September. We're probably not going to see one there. Maybe one in December. Maybe one. And the yields are very small, as we know. It's what? They have it at less than one quarter. Like a 1/4%, 0.5, I don't remember the exact number. But inflation is also very small. Inflation, our long-term average in the United States is 3%. One of the reasons the Federal Reserve raises rates is to slow down the economy to fight inflation. Well, they don't have that. There's no inflation whatsoever anywhere. I'm sure we're going to have some. There's going to be inflation. Okay, and it's a real problem when we get it. If it's over 3%, it gets excessive, and it outstrips wage inflation. And then we have, I don't know how many of you remember the old, days in the 1980s where inflation was out of control. Wages were trying to be kept up, and then there was price controls trying to stop inflation. It was a mess. Okay, but so we don't want to be in that. Matter of fact, we're probably closer to deflation than anything else right now. And that's even harder to fight than inflation. Now, if you want to fight inflation in your investments, probably one of the most direct way is through buying Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, or TIPS. That's very safe. And in a rising inflation environment, they would do well. Their yields are really bad now, but, and the yields go up. For TIPS, they go up every 6 months it's reevaluated, and it goes up as fast as the CPI, Consumer Price Index, goes up. So, that's one way to do it. I'm not suggesting you go out and buy them today, for certainty, because we're not seeing any inflation, but commodities are also a good area to invest when there's rising inflation. Their prices move up in relationship to the value of the dollar or supply and demand of the underlying good. In a strong economy, demand usually outstrips supply, driving prices higher. So commodity companies do well. And also stocks are good inflation hedges. They really are. So, and why? Because companies raise their prices and they can keep their profits. And matter of fact, the profit margins tend to expand during inflationary times because they tend to raise the prices higher than inflation, anticipating more inflation. And it's a cycle they keep doing. They keep raising the prices, stay ahead of inflation. Anyways, do you have any questions about hedges as a strategy, against inflation, against the market? Hedges. We've talked about that also. You can check in right now anytime you want. 888-99-CHART. We're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. We'll try to answer your questions.
Hello,
on the next.
Steve calling minutes. From Bend, Oregon. I appreciate your show and just wanted to ask about extended hours trading. I'm with Fidelity Brokerage, and they do offer extended hours trading. And I'm just wondering who would use that, and why would you use that, and who doesn't use that, and why don't they use that, and just in general, why extended hours trading is available, and why doesn't everybody just use extended hours trading? Or I'm not sure I understand why the market closes and then extended hours trading is offered as an option. So if you could clarify that a little bit, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, extended hours means that the markets are closed, but you can still trade stocks. Because what if I wanted to sell my stock to my next door neighbor? I can sell it, right? I can sell it anytime I want to. I don't have to wait for the market to open. I have to notify the change to the company and through the company through the exchange. You know, that's that I have to do, but I can do that the next morning when the market opens. Why would someone do that? Is because they want to make a trade after hours, and most often it's institutions, not individuals. Institutions, you know, I'm Fidelity. I have 10 million shares of Ford Motor Company, and I happen to know the Fidelity's funds are trying to get in a position into Ford Motor Company, and they're going to need a big hunk of stock. And I have it. So we might call each other up. I might call them and offer them a price on my Ford. For you as an individual, you're going to get a terrible fill. In other words, the spread between the bid and the ask after hours can be huge because there's no volume. The volume is dried up. There's no one trading after hours. They're waiting till the next day. You also got to remember that a lot of companies trade worldwide, not just here in our U.S. market. It could be traded anywhere. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of after-hours trading because of the liquidity issue, and that should be an issue for you as a small investor. So, there's no need for you to play in that game. It's just not something smart to do. But there's various reasons why it happens. Okay, everybody thinks that the market, you know, is the only place that stocks can exchange hands. No, that's not true. No. Any individual can sell and buy any stock to anybody at any time. You own the company. It's your ownership. Try to remember this. You are the owner of that company. You own this much, how many shares you have and what percentage of that is of the whole, all the shares outstanding. That's how much you own. You as an owner in a free economic society can sell your ownership to anybody you want at any time. Think of it that way. Okay? 888-99-CHART. Let's also try to answer one of the questions via the text message. You know that's getting to be pretty popular. Hi, Stephen, Justin. From a seasonal standpoint, is Nike, NKE, a good value right now? Okay, that doesn't really jive. A seasonal standpoint, is Nike a good value? Either it's a good time to buy and sell because of the season, or it's a good value. They don't necessarily go together. It could be a bad or good value anytime, any year. Let's look at Nike though. NK is a symbol, and everybody knows who they are, the footwear and clothing maker, mostly footwear worldwide. It's a $96 billion company, so it's no tiny thing. It's a mega cap, huge company. What's nice about Nike is they continue to grow. They're growing 6-8% sales, 10-15% earnings. Projected to be that much, very steady, very consistent. Therefore, you know, they have a higher PE than normal, than the average market. So they're a $57.41 stock, and they're going to make $2.76 next year. So you can see that's well over 20 PE, and the market average over any length of time is about 15. Okay, so therefore, you know, it's a pretty. You know, and relative to the overall market, expensive. And relative to itself, it's about mid range. At 5-year PE range is 17 to 34, and it's at 27. Very good return on equity. Very good numbers. Very solid company. They don't pay a big dividend. For a mega cap, they're only paying 1.1%. Now, the stock has made a correction in July. It bottomed right there around 52. So I have a feeling that if you, I like Nike. I like it a lot. And I think it's starting to make higher highs and higher lows coming off that bottom, which is a good sign. So it's now coming off its price a little bit. I think you're going to have a good opportunity to get into Nike. I would rather see you buy in the low 50s if you can get it. The only way it's going to go down there is if the market corrects and takes it with it. Because they had pretty good earnings not too long ago, but they give back most of that good news in recent last couple of weeks. And it was down today 1% when the market was up. So the market was up, you know, the Dow was up 46 points today, the NASDAQ up 26, and the S&P up 7, and Nike was down 1%. So that's, you know, I would be patient and see if you get it at the low 50s, and that's where I'd pick it up. And then, you know, once you buy it, you put it in a drawer and you forget about it. It's a core holding, you know. They've been consistently good for years, and I don't see how that's going to stop. Nike, NKE, everybody. Too many investors forfeit the benefits. Easy, low-cost diversification. Don't fall into the index fund trap. Okay, that's one of our talking points today. Also, I want to talk about housing prices across the country. You know, we here in the West think that what happens here is happening all across the country, and that is not true. So let's get real and let's talk about it. Experts are saying the economy is going strong, but there's some stats out there that look a little worrisome, especially if you're an executive of a corporation. So we're going to talk about those. And ways you are hurting yourself with your investments. You're hurting yourself. You think you're doing the right thing, but you're not. And there's certain things that you have to recognize about yourself. And this is one of the hardest things to do, to examine your personality, examine your habits, examine your intelligence, and be realistic about it. That is kind of important when you're investing money. Too many people think they know what they're doing, and they don't. And it's hard to convince yourself that, wait a minute, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm going to try to help you with some of the things that's happening inside yourself, the way you look at yourself, the way you react to yourself, and how that's hurting your ability to make money. A reminder that no matter where you live in the U.S., we can review your retirement picture. Now, I do set aside time each month for portfolio reviews or Skype or telephone to all listeners around the country. So if you want to schedule an hour with me, just go to investtalk.com, investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Matthew in Kansas. How you doing, Matthew?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, I was calling to get your opinion on PBCT, People's United Bank.
PBCT. Let me pull that up. Okay, give me the symbol again. P as in Paul.
B as in boy, C as in cat, and T as in Tom.
Got it. I missed that last one. T. People's United Financial. Got it. Okay, you want to be a buyer of it? You like it?
I put on a half a position at about $13.50, and I'd like to put on another half, but it seems a little pricey to me right now.
Yeah, I don't think I put it on right here, and simply because it's now at what we call resistance, right at that number, right around where it starts to stop going up. It's been there two or three times in the last year, and right around 1650, remember it's at like 1607 now, down 21 cents a day. It's tough. Now, it pays a really good dividend at 4.2%, and I think it's going to maintain that. It's growing decently. It's a holding company for a bank. It's a $5 billion company. I like the smaller banks much bigger than the bigger banks. So I kind of like this. I think it would work, but I wouldn't put on another half position here. I would not. Wait till it either breaks out or pulls back for you. Appreciate the call. Thank you, Matthew. Why not up your economic IQ? Take a look at our recommended book section at investtalk.com. You'll see Creative Destruction there. That's one of my favorites. 888-99-CHART. Eight eight 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. So what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind out there? I have lots of things to talk about, but I'm always interested in what clients are interested in instead of me or people out there, because, you know, I'm fascinated by the market, but maybe you're not. Maybe you just want to talk about something specific. So maybe we should say, don't fall in love with index funds, okay? I know index funds over long periods of time do great. And if you are that kind of person that can stand it and hold it, then you're okay. But most people aren't. They are very big indexers. They say they're going to stay in them. And this will go to my other point I'm going to make today, ways people hurt themselves. But people don't really understand who they are. But some of the things about indexes in particular, that not all indexes are the same. Some index funds are much cheaper than others. And I mentioned last week about Vanguard being index funds being cheaper, or Vanguard funds being cheaper than Schwab funds. And it's true. And I got several emails, people saying, well, no, it's not, because Schwab doesn't trade any trading costs for any of their funds. Well, neither does Vanguard. Most mutual funds don't charge any trading costs. Unless you're talking about ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that's different. But most don't charge. I'm talking about the ongoing management fee inside every fund. Every fund has that. Every index fund, every fund. That's how you think they make money. So I was referring to a wire. Vanguard is the least expensive in those fees. Okay, and if you're going to buy an index fund, you have to decide, are you going to be in a broad market index, or are you going to be in a more specific area in the indexing game? As you get more and more narrow in your indexing, you have less and less potential to make profits. The broad indexes are what we talk about beating most money managers. It's the broad indexes that beat it, not the specific ones. Specific ones can have some great years, and they can have some much worse years than the overall broad market. And one thing people do that you should not do with index funds is treat them like gambling. Buy them, sell them, buy them, sell them. They're not really designed for trading, index funds. What's designed for trading is leveraged index funds, but those are even much more risky than most people realize. So think about, indexing is great. I like indexing for those people who don't know much about markets, don't know what they should do, don't have a lot of money, and want to be in the market. Then buy an index, leave it alone for 20, 30 years, and you'll do just fine. Or at least leave it alone until you get close to retirement. Leave it alone until you get enough money to be more diverse. But, it's not for everybody. And what I see happening, and I see it happening now, by the way, is that people are moving away from indexing because they think, oh, it's not working, because it hasn't really worked very well in 2 years. I mean, it's up this year, but last year it was down. This year is a little bit above its high of last year, which was not a very big high. Okay, it wasn't after a big run-up the year before. It wasn't. It's been slowing down. So now everybody's getting, I see people getting disenchanted with the indexes and thinking they should do something else. This is a big mistake. If you're an indexer, stay in the index and ignore it for 10, 20 years. But if you can't do that, there's nothing wrong with not being able to do that. What you have to do is recognize that you aren't able to do that. Again, that's going to be one of my talking points, recognizing what yourself. Let's go to Don in Walnut Creek. How you doing, Don?
Hello?
Hi, Don.
Well, hi there.
What's up?
Well, I can barely understand you. I don't know if it's...
Do you have the radio on, or... Because I'm getting a feedback.
There we go. It could be where I was sitting in...
I'm losing you. I lost you. There.
All right. Well,
there you are. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. Let's see if we can do this. I have some, you know what? I think I'm going to try back another
Okay, that's fine. No problem. Appreciate the call. Donna Walnut Creek, maybe I'll try back on a better line. 888-99-CHART, housing prices across the nation. You know, we here in the West, and that's where I'm located, we think in terms of our housing market, you know, in California, and we know that our market is more expensive than everywhere else. But we seem to think that if the trend here is in California, that's the same trend everywhere. It's just faster here. Not quite right. And you did see the market. The Dow was up 46, the NASDAQ up 26, and the S&P up 7. It was actually a pretty weak day today. And we're going to have not very much economic news out this week, but the parts that we had, the one report we had out today, I'm going to talk about it, kind of disappointing. We're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through right now.
Get back to today's podcast in just a moment. KPP Financial created a strategy designed to accommodate investors who have a lower risk tolerance, but still desire some exposure to the potential growth of the stock market. Learn about our balanced income program. When you're ready, just go to investtalk.com and click on the investments tab. And now more Invest Talk. We continue now with this Tuesday, September 6th, Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve from anywhere in the U.S.
Hi, Steve. What's up, son? Love your show. This is Pete from Henderson, Nevada. My question is has to do with the PE. When you look at something like Yahoo Finance and it says the particular company has a PE of 15, and let's say in the past it was 18 or 19 or whatever, you know, what two numbers do you come up with to get to the 15 or the 18 or whatever the P is? That's really my question. That's it, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling. Best show. Bye, guys.
Okay, the PE is the price of the stock compared to the earnings of the company. The price of the stock of the company compared to the earnings, P/E. Okay, so P meaning earnings divided into the price, and it's usually the annual earnings. Okay, so if the PE goes down, that means either the earnings have gone up or the price of the stock has gone down or a combination of both. That's all. Earnings have gone up and or the price of the stock gone down. It could be one or the other or a combination of both. It's very simple. So let's take an example. Let's say the stock is a $20 stock. It's selling for $20 a share, and they make a $2 per share in earnings per year. So P, price of the stock, 20, divided by E, earnings, 2, means the PE is 10. Now, what if the earnings goes down? Earnings goes down, and the price stays the same. So earnings goes from $2 to $1. So now it's $20 a stock price divided by 1 gives you 20. The PE went up because the price of the stock didn't move. But the earnings did. They went down. Same thing would happen on the opposite way if the earnings went up. It's a moving target. Changes all the time. So when they give you a PE of a stock, they're looking at last 12 months earnings divided by the current price of stock. There's your PE. But what if they want to use forward estimates earnings next year, which is what I suggest you look at? Well, what does Yahoo Finance use? Do they give you both? They give you one and one. Which one did they give you? Okay, that's how it works. Housing prices across the nation. West Coast prices are growing faster than inflation. Now, that's not rocket science. It's probably not in news to most people. But on the West Coast in the United States, prices of properties, houses, are going much up much faster than inflation, which is pretty normal. parts of the East and Midwest, they are not keeping up with inflation, even though inflation is very, very low. They're not. So the whole country's real estate is not as robust as it here in the West. For instance, July, prices are up 1.1% year over year in July. In July they're up 1.1%, but year over year they're up 6% across the nation. But in the Pacific Northwest, they're up 11.2% year over year. Washington, they're up 10.2%. Oregon, a little over 11%. So it depends on where you're talking about. In Connecticut, prices actually fell 1.2% year over year and barely moved in New Jersey and Delaware, Vermont. Now, you might want to ask, what's driving the prices? And the answer is not totally 100% the reason, but a big part of it is about jobs market. Lots of jobs in the Pacific Northwest, so lots of jobs in California, especially in the Silicon Valley. Not too many jobs in Connecticut, one of the worst jobs market in the country, or New Jersey, or Delaware, or Vermont. Job market's not very good. So it tells you, you know, where, I mean, if you, I know people out there who are not in Silicon Valley probably don't understand how expensive the houses are in Silicon Valley. You can't imagine what $1 million would buy for you in Silicon Valley. You would think it'd buy a lot, huh? No. It'd buy you a very average house on a very small lot. Old house, by the way. And you're lucky if you can get it for $1 million. Just letting you know. Jay in Fremont knows about that. Hi, Jay. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Steve. Steve, I had a quick question on Lowe's, L-O-W. It has fallen down recently, and I want to know if it is a good buy at this price. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Jay. And Lowe's is Lowe's Company. L-O-W operates 1,857 Lowe's and Orchard Home Improvement Supply stores in the United States, Canada, Mexico. They're growing 17 to 20% earnings year over year. Pretty good. They're growing sales 5 to 8%. And one of the reasons why they fell, they missed their numbers. Now, don't get too excited. Experts, they talk about what they think is going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, that's when they miss their numbers. They still had good numbers. But the sales number only went up 5%. When the quarter before that, it was up 8%. See, so the sales were lower than they expected. They wanted more. Now, the price-earnings ratio, they're going to make $4.02 next year and $4.72 the year after, and it's a $76 stock. It's not cheap. So it's around 18, 19 PE based on next year's earnings and more like 20, 21 based on this year's earnings. And their five-year range is 13 to 28, so it's kind of on the upper side of that. And reason being, because that steady growth, high return on equity of 35%, which is very good, strong cash flow. They have good management on this. Mutual funds are slowly buying more and more and more every quarter. So it's got a lot of good things for it, going for it. It's now 81, and in January, February, it was at 62. Very good return. I'm sorry, it's not 81 now. It's at 76 now. It got as high as 82, almost 83, and then fell off because of the disappointing earnings. This might be good support for the stock. On a chart, it's good support. On a valuation basis, it's kind of expensive still. So I like the company. It's a $67 billion company. It would be what we call a core holding if you bought it. Doesn't pay a very good dividend, though, only 1.8%. That's kind of disappointing. So, you know, if you wanted to buy it, the 200-day moving average is $75.26. As long as it stays above that, it would be considered a possible buy. And it pulled down far enough that maybe this is where you'd want to pick it up. Still not cheap, though. Keep that in mind. Risk is fundamental to investing. The whole concept at the heart of investing is accepting a certain amount of risk. And you accept it in exchange for opportunity or gain or profit, right? You got to accept that risk. But my biggest bone of contention is not managing the risk. It needs to be managed. not just ignored or not understood, but managed. So what is a certain amount of risk? How much risk are you comfortable taking? Well, you can take our risk quiz and find out where you stand on the risk scale from 0 to 100. It's a scale of risk, 80 being the S&P 500. Then if you like, if you take that risk questionnaire on our website, you can send me your portfolio and we'll put it in the same software and see what the risk level of that. Also scale 0 to 100. You want to match up your risk tolerance with what you're actually taking. It's free there at investtalk.com.
The best investing approach is one that combines disciplined fundamental analysis with a market perspective and an understanding of human psychology. As Steve says, it's an art, not a science. How about sharing your investing experience? Steve and Justin would love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach InvestTalk right now.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Experts say the economy is going pretty strong in the third quarter. But there's been a couple of recent reports that I put a lot of weight on that make me a bit concerned. One was a few weeks, two weeks ago, I think it was the durable goods report. I wasn't very comfortable with that. But the more importantly, last week we had the ISM manufacturing report, Institute of Supply Management manufacturing section, because there's a service section and manufacturing. Services came out today. Manufacturing came in at 49.4% from 52.6% in August. So 1 month, it fell below the 50 mark. The 50 mark is the demarcation for expanding economy or shrinking economy. Below 50, shrinking. Above 50, expanding. So the manufacturing ISM number, and do you know that's nothing more than a survey of business executives and how they feel about the economy and what they're buying and their supplies. And it's a survey. It went from 52.6 to 49.4. That was a little bit disturbing, but we are a predominantly service-oriented economy. So I was going to be very interested in the report out this morning for the service sector, the ISM service sector. Now, it was at 55.5 in July. Remember, the manufacturing was 52. So 55.5, so I felt confident it would probably stay above 50. But how much above 50? Well, it fell from 55.5 to 51.4. That's a pretty big drop. A bigger drop in numbers than the manufacturing. But still above 50, so we're expanding. But when you combine these two numbers, compare them month over month over month, going back, the last time these two combined numbers were this low, was 6 years ago. 6 years ago. What does it also mean when it relates to the GDP for the third quarter? It might be telling us that our GDP is going to be around 1%, not the 2.5% that all the experts in the Fed all predict. It might be much less. You watch. There's going to be revisions here for the third quarter. They're going to start ratcheting down their expectations before you actually get the real number. So I'm not predicting an economic slump, but I'm saying that we are having some headwinds here. And it's more than just nothing. Housing is still very strong. The job market is still very strong. So maybe these numbers are wrong. Remember, it's just a survey. It's a survey. So maybe these are wrong numbers. Maybe they'll get adjusted up. But it does, put a question mark in my mind, and it tells me the Fed is not going to touch the rates in September. They're later on this month. Just not. Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Yeah, my name is Eric from Tennessee, and I really appreciate your show. My question is for Southwest Airlines, symbol LUV. I'd like to know your analysis on what you think the holding looks like short term for the next probably 1 to 2 years. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay, I am not a fan of the airline, just like I'm not a big fan of gold. I'm not. And guess what? I bought LUV a couple weeks ago, Southwest Airlines. Because remember, I'm a very good, I want to buy value. And I'm looking at Southwest Airlines and other airlines. I still look at them. And, of course, everybody knows Southwest provides predominantly point-to-point, high-frequency, short-haul domestic airline service in 97 cities and 40 states, mostly in the West. They're going to make increase their earnings by 8% this year, another 2% next year. And their sales growth is up between 5 and 10% quarter after quarter for the last 2 years. Most recent quarter up 5%. And the stock is at $36.95, and they're going to make $3.90. That means the PE is below 10. And you know how I like value. The five-year range is 9 to 27 for PE, and its PE is below 10. Kind of like that. Pays a small dividend of 1.1%. It's a $22 billion company, huge cash flow, very large return on equity. Mutual funds are buying it fairly strongly, and yet the stock fell from $48, $49 in May down to $36.95 now. It got as low as about $35 before it started to move up. And I say, I like when I buy a stock, and you hear me talk about it, and I do put my money where my mouth is. I tell you to wait till the stock stops falling. Fell from 47 all the way down to almost 35. And then start, and I say, wait till it starts to recover. Show something, some strength. And so that fell down there in August and has been trading up slightly, but mostly sideways since then, with a slightly upward turn in the last week or two. Looks like it's trying to hold that number and start to gain strength to me, so I bought it. So that tells you what I think about it. LUV, Southwest Airlines. And I don't like airlines. But see, I feel confident because I know oil is not going to go up in price, and that's one of the things I don't like about airlines because they're subject to, you know, prices of their fuel, and it varies greatly over time. And, you know, that's one of the things I don't like. So one of the issues I can't control, I think, is fairly under control. The other issue is, labor laws and labor disputes. It's the other issue why I don't like them. 888-99-CHARGE, our anytime number. But if you can't get through to the program during our live hour, use the 24-hour listener line, and we'll answer the question on the next Invest Talk. Or you can send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
Now is a good time to call Invest Talk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on Invest Talk.
Let's talk to James in New York. How you doing, James? James, you there? We lose him? I guess we lost him. Okay, let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art? Hello. We lost both
Hello.
Of them. Art, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. Okay. I wanted to see what your take is on Dollar General. It's dropped quite a bit since last week. I think they had bad earnings or something.
Yeah, they had an earnings issue. It was at $90, and now it's at $72. So that tells you how fast. I mean, that was in 2 weeks. Within 2 weeks, it fell that far. Operates 12,575 stores located in 43 states. Plans to open about 900 more in 2016 and 17. 900 of them. Now, this is Dollar General Corporation, symbol DG, everybody. Earnings are growing about 10 to 15%. Sales are growing about 5 to 8%. And sales only grew 5% this most, 6% this most recent quarter. And that was a bit of a disappointment to the experts. And Art, I think you're looking at it right. This might be a buying opportunity developing here. So it's still falling. I want you to wait until it turns sideways, as I usually do. It looks like it can go all the way down to like the six, high 60s and may even touch the low 60s. But that, I think, is about as far as it would go down. If it does that.
Yeah, I was actually looking in the mid-60s if I could get it there.
But, yeah, I think that would be a good.
Trying to wait till it dropped a little bit more. But
yeah, I think that would be a good price,
Art. Thanks for the take on it.
Thanks, Art. I think it would be a good price, Dollar General, in the mid-60s. P.E. right now is 17. By the way, do you know what the S&P 500 or P.E. ratio is right now? It's about 18. So that's high. Remember, the average over any length of time for the S&P 500 is about 15. Now, I will say this. In a low inflation environment like we have, it could be higher than 15. And that would be normal, but not as high as it is right now. Ways you can be hurting yourself with your investments. And these are personal things, personal ways. Like, for instance, the first one is not understanding yourself. Are you a passive person? Are you an aggressive person? Are you a person that can't sit still? Or a person, it doesn't matter which type you are. What matters is, do you know what type you are? Doesn't matter which one you are. Because if you understand who you are, then you can deal with that in your investments. Some of the ways that people hurt themselves badly is too much activity, too much trading, too much moving around. A passive person doesn't do as much as an active person. So if you were one of these very type A personalities, then you need to understand that that's what you'll that will flop into your investing life, and you have to adjust for it. Do you confuse luck with skill? One of the worst things that can happen to a new investor is he picks a stock and it skyrockets and just makes him a ton of money, him or her. Now he or she thinks they're a genius. And that is luck. And you know what? Even for a person like me, who've been around doing it for years and years and years, it's luck for me too. You just can't pick a stock and it skyrockets. That's not how it works. You know, you just get lucky every so often. That's great. Remember before, I'm talking about managing risks. Another thing. Do you accept short-term pain gracefully without panicking? Because you're going to have it. You're not going to be right every time. And you're not going to be right in your the time at the time you buy something. It could be a great company that you picked a really wonderful stock and corporation, but it might be at the very wrong time. Can you live with that? And one last thing, if you need help, ask a professional. Don't ask your brother-in-law, your sister-in-law, or your friend next door. If you need help, ask a professional to help you. If he can't give you honest, clear advice, then ask another one. Our time is up. I hope you got something out of the program today. I really do. Your questions help me keep on track, addressing issues that you need to know. And, you know, use our 24-hour listener line. We'll get to the questions on the next program, next Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's reconvene tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.